Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Friday Night Lights. They've been a cornerstone of American culture for a long time. I know I myself have plenty of great memories, being 16 in the stands, wearing my school colors, and shouting till my throat is sore. But with all the energy that goes behind youth sports, what are the effects of this activity on children and teens? Well, WBBM sport reporters Rick Gregg and Josh Liss have the answers. I'm Arielle Ravenay. And today's episode will be a tad different than normal. Rick and Josh have done a series of interviews with different figures in Chicago dealing with youth sports. And that's what we'll be listening to this week. Load the bases, and let's get looped in Chicago. To start off a conversation about the effects of youth sports, it's good to know why sports are something that young people are drawn to.
They provide a safe place to be. They provide a place to belong. There's all kinds of lessons that have been proven, you know, that sports teach kids as they're growing up. And the main reason why I do what I do is because, you know, I grew up playing sports. I know what sports did for me just as an individual. It gave me confidence. It gave me a healthy competitiveness. It gave me habits, healthy habits, you know, for staying active and healthy and eating right and all those types of things, you know. So when you add it all up, it's like, wow, like it really does. It can change a person's life. It can save a person's life.
That's Tina Cernett, executive director of the Sports Shed. Her group has donated more than $3 million worth of equipment and money to inner city and suburban low-income sports programs as a solution to the opportunity gap in sports. She spoke with Rick Gregg about her experience with the organization and what it means to have equitable access to material.
What have you found that is most needed over 15 years? Is it stuff? Is it time? Is it place? Is it all of it?
It's all of it. But I would say the grandest need that is the most difficult to really address is the facilities. So there's, you know, all that geographic area and populated area, the amount of field space, gym space. You know, because the schools that are in these areas, not all of them have gyms. The ones that do have gyms, some of them are horrible. Where, you know, in the suburban and more affluent areas, there's huge facilities going up everywhere. And all these schools have amazing, you know, facilities and fields and gyms, double, you know, three and four gyms each school and, you know, multiple fields to be played on. You know, it's just... Again, the disparity is just almost like insane. I mean, if you really know the situation, it's just like, how can this be? You know, the space, the gym space, the field space, it's just not even there. But what is there is like, you know, completely unaffordable. And sometimes it's being used by, to be quite honest, people who are coming in from the affluent areas to use those spaces because they have money to pay for it.
And there's no good answer to that because you can't just produce the money out of thin air, but that's kind of where your group came in a little bit. Although I know you focused a little more on the equipment, right?
You know, in recent years, we have done a lot more in terms of sponsoring field cost and connecting organizations to just accessibility of gym space, field cost, tournament, you know, getting into tournaments, organizations that are doing tournaments. Like, we have sponsored a lot of things like that so that there's just accessibility and opportunity for kids to play.
Opportunity for children to play sports may go beyond having access to material, though. Kurt Gibson, Associate Executive Director for Illinois High School Association, is in charge of officials. He told Rick that his office has seen a decline in the past decade of people applying for officiating licenses.
There is a lot of turnover. Bringing folks into the officiating fold is sort of the easier of the two parts. It's retaining them that can be challenging. And we know in particular our newer officials are the ones that we're having a hard time retaining. If we can keep folks in for a 3 to 5 year window, they're more likely to stick with it over the long haul.
So why is it that people leave? And I'm sure the reasons are different. Sometimes, you know, somebody's been doing this for 40 years and he's just done. Sometimes, you know, you have those new people who have just started and say, this isn't for me. What are the normal reasons?
We know, though, that one of the big reasons from, and we know this from surveying our officials last school year, is the sportsmanship that officials are encountering. It seems to be getting worse, not better. You know, that's from a participant standpoint, so coaches and players as well as fans.
I mean, they're just people doing a job, but I mean, everybody's gotten upset at a call. But it seems to me that there's a difference between being upset at a call and trying to take it out on somebody, you know?
Right. It does seem to have gotten more personal. We're human. You know, officials are human, too, and it just becomes too much. And sometimes we think folks are carrying over behaviors that have occurred outside of the school setting into the school setting. And I think officials understand that they're going to make calls that people don't agree with. But when it gets to that more personal level, that's when it really starts to turn people off.
You know, I know this is a big question, but what are you doing about it? You know, and I'm not trying to be accusatory, but you've got to, you know, teach fans to be nice and you've got to teach officials that sometimes this is going to happen and you're still going to be okay.
Exactly. That's a two-way street. And so for the official, by having them align themselves individually with an association, we're trying to build in some support for those folks. So they have a person they can go to, somebody who's been there, who's dealt with that kind of criticism. That's an important piece. From our school's perspective, we're going to start by having what we hope is a more robust conversation about this than we've had previously. We need to talk about why we need to support the work of officials, and maybe there's more that our office can do to help our newer school administrators handle some of those folks in the crowd who are making the night or the day, depending on when the game is, not a good one for everybody. So but before we can, you know, really start enacting too much change, we got to start having the conversation. So that's what's going to be a big part of our emphasis this year.
And it's important to note, too, this isn't an Illinois problem. I mean, it's a national, you'll hear stories every once in a while all over the country about, you know, these people berated an official for whatever and whatever follows that. I'm not looking for specifics. I'm saying it's not something that's unique to us. Are there any specific sports that suffer more than others for lack of officials?
Well, you know, we play a lot of games in Illinois. So we certainly could use more basketball officials. Baseball and softball are also on the lower end. Football. I mean, the big team sports, I'll call them big, meaning the number of games and the number of participants. Those are where we probably need our most help.
Why do people get into the officiating game?
Going back to the survey, a lot of folks indicated, and this shouldn't, I would hope, not be a surprise to people. People want to give back, and that's the number one driving element to bring people into the officiating space, is they want to give back. They had a good experience in a sport. Maybe they watched their child play a sport, and now this is an opportunity. They have more time at their disposal. This is a chance for me to help in my community, and I want to become an official. Other people cite health reasons. Hey, it'll be a great opportunity for me to, you know, get back in shape. So those are the two primary reasons folks get into it, although I'm sure, you know, being able to earn a little side money is also an incentive.
But it must be extra painful then when you're just doing this to help out the community, or you're doing it because you had such a good experience, to then be treated poorly by the fans, which is why, again, it comes back to this whole we've got to be nicer to people thing.
Yeah, it sours that experience and all those thoughts you had about why am I wanting to do this when you have to encounter a lot of these negative behaviors.
Treating people involved in the sport process with humanity doesn't end with the adults. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about what a good coach looks like and what the mental health risks associated with these games are.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of trust in the hands of coaches when it comes to making an athlete out of a child. Josh Liss spoke with Brian Duffy, a longtime coach and owner of the top-tier North Baseball Club.
So I think it starts with the coaching. Like I tell players all the time, if they're around good coaches, you know, that's where they need to be until they hit a certain level. So I've seen players with us develop really young. I mean, we've had players in the program for, you know, when they start super young at 8, 9 years old and build up all the way through when they start going into college. And it's a great thing to see because you see how they develop over time. And you want to learn some of those advanced skills at a young age. And if you could do that from a mechanical standpoint, you're going to be in a really good spot when you hit puberty and then start gaining some strength. So for us, that's the biggest focus. And that's some of the real positive things I've seen is you develop a kid in terms of the baseball side mechanically in a really good spot. And obviously mentally, just a general passion for the game. And if you have those two things going on, once they hit a spot, like I said, and they go through puberty and then they gain some strength and hit the weight room and stuff like that, they're going to be in a great spot because they're going to love the game and they're going to have a lot of success because they've been taught the right things at a young age.
And yet the club travel experience is not for every child or every family. You're dealing with parents all the time. You're building teams. You say you have about 30 of them each summer. It must be an adventure dealing with mom and dad. You put their son or child on a B team. They think they belong on an A team, and the fun begins. So what mistakes do families seem to make, when even if they're meaning well for their child, and how can they avoid those early mistakes, especially if they're shopping around for a club or travel team?
Yeah, I think it's, again, goes back to finding people that care around their kid on the player development side, regardless of what team they're going to be on. If the kid's being challenged around good coaches, trying to help the kid, engaging with the family, having a really good relationship with the player in terms of developing just an overall excitement for the game and getting them better so when they are faced with better competition, they're ready for it. Some mistakes I've seen some families make is worrying a little bit too much about the external factors going on. You know, there's going to be, especially in travel, there's going to be other coaches that reach out. There's going to be the Twitter stuff going on and worrying about player rankings and team rankings and all that stuff. And really, like in the big picture of things, none of that matters. You know, when you're talking about sports, you're trying to get kids to learn first and foremost, build team relationships, learn how to, you know, if they have failure, develop from it, get better, make adjustments, that sort of thing.
Not everyone involved with youth sports wants to end up a pro, or harder yet, won't get a college scholarship for it. Rick spoke with Luke Mertens, St. Patrick High School head football coach, about the pressure high school-aged athletes experience.
I want to talk to you specifically about some of the mental costs, not necessarily the financial ones that kids face these days in youth sports, starting all the way from when they're young. But you deal with high school athletes. You've had hundreds of them come through. Some of them have gone to be professionals, but you know, we're all trying to raise good people. So where do you start with them?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point you just made, because I think unintentionally many parents and coaches have forgotten what we're trying to do, which is raise great people, raise future adults that are going to be great contributors to society. And a lot of that has been lost. And I feel like we have professionalized sports at such a young age that I've noticed kids use words like my career now at 14 years old. And there's this implicit pressure of spend more money, specialize more, go all in on this one thing, because if you don't, you're going to fall behind. So I feel like all the reasons that parents used to have their kids play sports, and I hate to use the term back in the day, but I have to say back in the day, it's lost. It's now it's about college scholarships. And it's again, which the odds of that happening, I mean, it's been well documented. So it's a really interesting thing that I'm seeing.
Well, I mean, my son is 12. He's seventh grade. He made the varsity baseball team. And in the first meeting, the coaches said, you know, there are going to be scouts at some of these games from like Joliet Catholic and other schools looking at you. And my son went, the hell are you talking about? He had no idea that that was even a thing. He actually shrunk away from that and was not ready for that kind of expectation. And we keep putting that on kids younger and younger now, not just the high school kids, but I mean, you look at the AAU tapes and the rankings of the world's greatest fifth grade basketball players or whatever. It's just insane.
Yeah. I mean, think about how absurd that statement is that you just made, that we're ranking fifth graders. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. I mean, those kids probably, you know, half of them still believe in Santa Claus, you know, I mean, and we're ranking them. It's complete insanity. And what's really nuts is the adults are buying into it. You know, I mean, we want to blame kids. The kids are not to blame. We're the ones, we, the adults, are creating this environment. And, you know, we always, oh, these kids are all specializing. It's not the kid that's specializing. It's the adults that are making the kids specialize. It's the adults that are filling these kids, you know, heads with, hey, it's about your scholarship. I think it's just filled with a lot of false hopes and dreams, and shame on these organizations that are preying on the hopes and dreams of parents, which is really sad, because they're just trying to set their son or daughter up for success. And they're going, hey, I can't afford college, so how am I going to make this happen? And there's so much irony in that, right? Because they're spending more money on sports, where if they would have just saved and they could have possibly afforded college. On top of that, as I explained to all my parents, the most money available is academically. So if you really want to make college affordable, stop spending all this money on sports.
Like, how do you address this, say, at the first parent meeting of the year that you have? I'm sure you have one at the beginning of the year with all the students and their parents. Do you attack this? Do you say, here's what we expect, and you notice that it has nothing to do with, you know, whether they're going to play at the next level or not?
Yeah, I do and I don't, because I don't ever want anyone to think that I'm stomping on someone's dreams, because sometimes it comes off as you're saying, what do you mean you're telling me my son can't make it? And that's not the message that we want to convey as coaches. I mean, our job as coaches is to help our kids get to the highest level that they possibly can get to. But I also just want to make sure they understand that if you just focus on the process and you focus about how you go about your day-to-day of being a student, of being an athlete, of being a human being, then you just let the rest take care of it from there. But if you're focusing on what do I have to do to make it, to get seen, to get the offer, it's not going to happen. It's just not. It's this day-to-day process, because then you win either way, because even if you don't get the elusive scholarship, you still have created a discipline mindset of how to approach success in whatever endeavors you're going to approach post-athletic career, which is going to be most of us, you know, right out of high school, to be honest with you.
Kids and teens engaging in sports can be a great way to build friendships, routine, and healthy habits. But what are some of the psychological effects of experiencing the pressure of success at a young age? Josh spoke with Dr. Holly Benjamin, professor of orthopedic surgery, rehabilitation medicine, and professor of pediatrics at the University of Chicago.
Specialization has certainly affected stress levels and perhaps injury levels. And you wonder, how can playing a quote-unquote game, theoretically for fun, as a kid, actually exacerbate mental health issues? What examples have you come to know of how kids can really be affected?
We see it most dramatically at the higher level of sport, where some of our youth athletes that experience success at young ages are somewhat of a hard work ethic. They are very goal-oriented. They are somewhat perfectionist sometimes as well, and sometimes very intelligent and actually overanalyze what is going on in their life and their performance. And there's kind of a gray zone where the relationship of the athlete to their sport crosses over negatively, where their identity becomes part of the sport participation and their identity as a person is they only feel good as being seen as a successful athlete. And then the negatives pop in.
Yeah, and that's where the parents come in, at least in my sort of next question here. It seems like parents sort of take an identity and share an identity with their young superstar athletes some days, and they're along for the ride, but it may spin out of control. What advice might you have for parents of younger people interested in putting their smaller children in athletics? Should there be a warning label or a welcome sign?
There should definitely be a warning label about early sports specialization. There's a lot of research coming out in the last 10 years that shows that very elite athletes did not specialize at younger ages. Tom Brady is probably one of the best examples of that, where he played, you know, multiple sports, baseball and football, and actually didn't even start as a quarterback until he was a sophomore in high school. One thing, if you talk to successful college professional and Olympic athletes, they do say that they found balance in their lives for the physical and the mental aspects of being an athlete. And it was really important that they found good social support at young ages in order to be successful.
Accidents happen, doctor, but healthy habits only go so far as well. If there's anything to help keep your child out of the doctor's office or the social worker's office, what could it be these days?
Well, I've got two key takeaway points for any of your listeners out there, Josh. Number one is, what's the most important sign in a youth athlete of problems? And that's lack of enjoyment in their sport. The minute an athlete is not enjoying participating, not wanting to go to practice, you know, worried about performance, then you got to pay attention. That is, there's something going on there that's creating clear signs of mental stress and it needs to be nipped in the bud. As far as physical goes, basically sound mind, sound body. So it's really good warm-ups, good cool-downs, so that cross-training is important, and then just doing a variety of sports. And I call it always developing an athlete. You don't want to develop just a football player, just a basketball player, just a gymnast at a young age. You want to develop a youth athlete so that they could do almost anything.
And to wrap up, is the state of youth sports, in your opinion, injuries and mental health, at least trending in the right direction with the amount of awareness that's out there? Or is this still a bigger issue that's not going away anytime soon?
I think the trends are going in a good direction post-COVID as far as mental health goes. There's definitely a sense of acceptance and openness that it is now becoming increasingly okay to talk about mental health in our youth athletes and our college and professional athletes as well. And that's a huge breakthrough for the field of sports. As far as the overuse goes, I think we're still getting the message out about some of the concerns and dangers about early sport participation, and just the foundational importance of free play and enjoying the sport and listening to the athlete and listening to what they really like, what they want to do.
Yeah, it's hard enough being a kid at any point, I suppose, at least these days. And sports and athletics and their mental health issues should not be affected, should be bothered by athletics. Doctor, what's left to talk about on this topic?
You know, everybody's open to physical therapy for injuries, but we got to be open to mental health therapy for the mental aspect. We have to watch out for signs of abuse in the extreme form from coaches or even parents. And then lastly is also just the sense of prevention and really just letting the athletes sleep letting them have good nutrition, and making sure that they're recognized for who they are as a person, and their self-worth is not just as an athlete.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Looped in Chicago. This episode was hosted and produced by me, Arielle Ravine, Rick Gregg, and Josh Liss. Craig Schwalb is our station's news director. You can subscribe to the program on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. And be sure to follow us on social media at WBBM News Radio and at WBBM Podcasts for visual content relating to our episodes. We'll keep you looped in again right here next week. See you then.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.